House Committee on Revenue for May 14th, 2015 will come to order. We're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3029. And please give us an introduction, and then we'll hear from the good representative.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3029 would create a subtraction from federal taxable income, and that also becomes Oregon taxable income, for benefits paid to a surviving spouse or a dependent child of a service member. It provides for a full subtraction for benefits up to $30,000 a year and a 50% subtraction for benefits greater than $30,000, unless the taxpayer is blind or has a disability. In that case, it would provide for a subtraction for the full amount of benefits.
Very good. Representative Parrish.
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, for the record, Julie Parrish, House District 37, Westland and Tualatin, bringing you what is a pretty simple cleanup bill, actually. It sounds dramatic, a big tax credit, but or deduction, or subtraction, sorry. However, this bill should have a minimal, if any, fiscal, and I'll explain that why. So when you are a service member and you retire from the military, you are given a pension of a rate of 50% of your final pay, and that final pay is your base pay. It does not include the housing allowances or meal allowances or anything that you had when you're in the service. While you are out processing from the military, you may make the election to, if you have a spouse, to take a reduced amount of that 50% and allocate it at some point in the future to your spouse when you pass on. So in the case of, say, a service member who had a final pay of $40,000, their pension at 50% would be 20, but maybe they would see an allocation of $17,000 because they're going to essentially buy what resembles an annuity for the purpose of giving that to their spouse in the future. Under Oregon's current law, if you retired before 1991 from the military, October 1st, 91, we currently don't tax that benefit. So this is why I say that there's not a big fiscal on this, or if any fiscal, because we're currently not getting income taxes from that population, and we don't for state workers as well, and that's sort of all bound up in a U.S. Supreme Court decision in 1991. So what happens then, though, when the veteran dies, and then this annuity and this money transfers, the benefit transfers over to the spouses, we begin taxing that. So this bill simply just keeps that in line with the fact that it's already tax-free income for our older veterans and their families. Predominantly right now, this will affect the remaining World War II veterans, certainly Korean era are in this mix, or Vietnam, and anybody who did peacetime and reached and achieved 20 years are currently, if they die before their spouse. If the spouse dies before them, there's no recouping of that income at all by the federal government. So it's just a total loss for them if there's no transference of that. Currently in Oregon, there are about 22,000 1099-Rs from the DOD. That's a mix of veterans and spouses. So we're really talking about a very finite universe of people who had a spouse while they were finishing their service, made that allocation, and then have also passed on. So we don't know exactly what the number out of that 22,000 looks like, but it's a pretty small number, and it keeps it consistent with what is current practice, which is that older generation of veterans, we're not taxing them for their retirement.
Very good. Questions?
Good bill should pass.
No. Do you need another minute, or shall we?
And Representative Evans, who's my other chief sponsor on this, could not be here, but he did provide a letter for you. It's on OLIS.
Yes,
as well,
he did, so. And he indicates he's at the 40th anniversary event for the Hmong Laotian Allies.
Yes, he is today.
A very important item for him, personally, I think.
Yes.
In addition to his as a state representative.
So again, I do believe the fiscal impact on this is like an indeterminate. There's probably not a real way to solve it, but it's.
Of course, we're not interested in the fiscal impact. We're interested
in the revenue impact.
But I think that's
there's probably
I think that's what you meant.
No, there's no cost anywhere, I don't think, that we can find, given that that portion of income is already tax-free for those individuals. We're just transferring that when the veteran dies to their spouse.
I get you. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Unless there are further questions, no, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3029. And colleagues, we have two items that have to do with volunteer firefighters. One of them has to do with the Chekhov contribution, and we wanted to hear from the Chekhov Commission so we get an idea of what how this system works. And after we've heard that, then we'll open the bills. So who's here for that purpose? Yes, thank you. Ken.
And Ross. Yes.
Good to see you. You were hiding back there. I missed you.
Thank you, Chair Barnhart, members of the committee. My name is Ken Ross. I'm a personal income tax program manager at the Department of Revenue, and I'm also the advisor for the Charitable Chekhov Commission. And I was asked to just come give a brief overview of the process of joining the Charitable Chekhov program. So I'll keep it high level and then entertain questions if you have them. So the Charitable Chekhov program, you're all familiar with that. It's the program that allows taxpayers who have a refund on their personal income tax return to donate a portion or all of it to a charity that are part of this program, and currently there's 28 of those. The process that the charities go through to get in to join the program, it's pretty much laid out in statute. They have to do an application to the Charitable Chekhov Commission that's due July 1 in order to get on reviewed for the coming year. They have to support or engage in public activities that are consistent with policies and programs of the state. They look at the commission looks at how these resources are used, and if they're used in substantial and direct benefit to human and natural resources that of the state that are unlikely to occur under existing public programs. So that's one of the criteria. There's some hard and fast criteria also. They must be a charitable organization, meaning they qualify under the IRC or the Internal Revenue Code as a charity. They must have $1 million in revenue, so $1 million in donations in the year prior to application. And they must also gather 10,000 signatures of registered voters in the year of application. So all this goes to the Charitable Chekhov Commission. They review for that they meet all the criteria. They meet annually. Approve. I'm sorry. They approve. Send the list to the Department of Revenue. We get them listed on the for instructions, and the way it's currently set up by law is 10 of those are on the return every year, and we rotate those 10 every 2 years, and we have two write-in lines. So a person could donate up to 12 charities on the tax return each year. It's real high level. I would entertain questions if you had them.
Yeah. What I was hoping for was to sort of get an explanation for the new members as to why this cumbersome system was set up. Hmm. And so maybe I'll add a couple things to what you said. For your information, colleagues, I'm currently the House member of this particular commission, which I think is meeting in a couple of weeks, probably during the time we're still in session. I'm looking here to see if I can find it, and I think
Chair Barnhart, that it's set for July 6th.
Oh, July 6th. So it's hopefully after we've adjourned. Yes.
Yes.
But we could still be in session then. Thank you. I knew I'd seen it on the calendar. I didn't remember when. There have been a couple of these charities that have been were established on this checkoff by the legislature a long time ago. I don't know the year, but it was some time ago. And because they were quite successful in collecting money, and remember, this is not money that comes out of the taxes, but rather out of the refunds that taxpayers would otherwise receive. And the result of that was that a number of other charities came along and asked to be listed. And of course, the department didn't have any resources to figure out how to do that, so we wrote the statute that Ken referred to. Which basically established these criteria. There's a couple of issues around this that I think are important. One of them is that there's only a limited amount of space on the paper tax return, the Schedule 40 or the the 40S, is that what it's called?
Form 40.
Form 40 or Form 40?
NNP.
NNP, yes. Okay. Yes. So there's only a limited amount of space on those forms, so we quickly run into a situation where you have too many. So what I recall, and please correct me if I miss this, is that we decided that with a couple of exceptions, we would rotate the names on the Form 40, and that people, that those charities that are listed on the form often get substantially more money on the years they're on the form than on the years they're not on the form, the years that they're simply included in the instructions. And as he pointed out, you can add other charities to your largesse by taking the code number off of the instruction and sticking it on the form. Now, this is where it gets murky for me. Many people file tax returns using online systems, mm-hmm. where the issue of the length of space on the paper doesn't come up. Now, in that situation, we list all of them, don't we?
Chair Barnhart, we do typically. From my personal experience using software, it will give you a drop-down box choice of the ones that are listed on the return, so you see those immediately, and then it will list in a separate portion the remaining that aren't on the return.
So it mimics the form.
It does.
Okay, the paper form. So the issue has been right along which charities will be listed. And the legislature, right or wrong, seized on this idea that in order to demonstrate that you're actually a bona fides, you're going to be doing things with the money that the state is unlikely to do, but which further our state goals. You have $1 million in revenue, and primarily donations, I assume we're thinking about, during the prior year, and that you can get 10,000 signatures. That sort of proves you're good. One of the experiences we've had is that the more different charities that get listed, the less the amount of return is for each charity. And I'm not sure about this one. Perhaps the less less return there is overall. I don't know about that. Could you treat that as a question and answer that?
Chair Barnhart, I'm not sure that I can speak to the cause, but the number of donors and the total dollar amount of donations has trended down the last several years.
Okay. Mm. Of course, there are a lot of reasons. We've just been through a big recession.
Right.
A lot of possible reasons for that. All right. Any other questions? Yes, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Davis. And great to see you. It seems like it's been a while this session.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for being back. I missed how many organizations total are now on the list that gets rotated?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Davis, there's 28 that.
28?
Yes.
Okay, and they get rotated 10 at a time. And it looks like there are 6 statutorily enacted organizations.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
And are those rotated also?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. All right, yes, Representative Leininger, please.
I was trying to see if there was a list of the organizations on OLIS, and I can't find it. So if it's there, I apologize for the question. But could you name the ones that are statutorily designated, please?
They're probably in the bill.
Oh, they are. Okay. Well, then may I transition to a different
please,
question?
Please, yeah.
So the $1 million, I knew about this bill primarily from talking to my good colleague, Representative Boone, who is advocating for the Volunteer Firefighters, which is a really important organization. And
we'll get to the bill later.
Yeah.
Yeah, in a
minute.
But
one of the things that I noted you said was that $1 million, I think, annual income is a requirement, and presumably that has some bearing on the capacity of the organization to track and receive and account for money. When I was in the foundation sector, one of the things that we were aware of is that the Oregon Community Foundation often acts as a fiscal intermediary, as an umbrella entity for some of the really small nonprofits to make sure that they're able to track and account for information. Would the function of the $1 million minimum threshold for annual revenue be fulfilled if there were a suitable fiscal intermediary that were willing to kind of vouch for and guarantee the ability of the organization to track and account for the money?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Leininger. Not by statute. The only way that if you had a local organization, they can, and they're part of a like a national or bigger organization, they can use the national organization as, to qualify for their $1 million. But if they're not, if I'm understanding you correctly, if it's not necessarily affiliated or part of that group, I don't believe that would count.
May I ask a follow-up?
Yeah, please. Yeah.
Could they enter into a fiscal management contract with the larger organization and satisfy the requirement? Or, I mean, if it's vague, if it's ambiguous, that's also a decent answer because maybe there's an opportunity to make that case, but...
Chair Barnhart, I'm looking at the statute real quick. I hate to go out on a limb and...
Well, let me make an attempt at that one.
Okay.
This current statute was passed at some point during the time I was here. Uh-huh. And I think the point of the $1 million and the 10,000 signatures was actually to demonstrate that this was an organization that had a statewide reach and that it might actually benefit from being listed, because if you can get that kind of support, the odds are that there are small dollar contributions that will come in through the tax return. If you're much smaller than that, then, I mean, our thinking at the time was, if you're much smaller than that, then the odds are that that it probably is not going to generate much money, and it detracts from the capacity of the other listees to receive donations, simply because of the numbers get too large after a while.
May I make one
comment? Sure, please. Yeah.
I think I can understand that was reasonable thinking at the time. The question that occurs to me is, if an organization were able to have the, belovedness and goodwill in the community that would enable them to get 10,000 signatures but doesn't necessarily operate on $1 million a year budget, and it seems like there are plenty of organizations that might fit that bill, Do we really need to have both in order to test for the reasonable merit question that you've identified?
Chair Barnhart,
I think I'd interpret that question as a question of practicality, not policy. Because I know you're not going to answer a policy question.
That's correct, Chair Barnhart. I'm not sure that I can speak to the practicality other than, when you say practicality, you're talking about just the sheer volume and the number of charities that, as you alluded to earlier, that the larger it grows, the donations in theory get diluted to each charity.
Something else, Representative?
Nope.
Okay. Thank you very much. I hope this was useful to the new members so we can get an idea of what we're dealing with here. So we're going to open a public hearing on these two bills, House Bill 2818 and House Bill 3550. Because at least part of the subject matter of these two bills is the same. With that, we'll open those two public hearings. And I see some representatives and a senator here. Better come forward.
Are you doing both bills?
Yes, both of them. Yep. Welcome to the Revenue Committee. Thank you for being here today.
So, just to be clear, you're opening both at once?
Yes.
And running them simultaneously? They're different bills.
Yes, they are. Both of them involve firefighters, and so that's the common thread. But they have different mechanisms for funding.
They're two completely different issues, Representative. One is a tax credit, one is a tax checkoff. So I think it might be confusing to hear, intermittent. I mean, it'd be, you're the chair, I guess, but...
Yep. Yeah, thank you.
Okay,
Representative.
For the record, Deborah Boone, House District 32, and addressing House Bill 2818.
Okay.
Should we keep every comment we have per bill, just announce that?
I don't think it's necessary. We typically open two or three bills at a time when they have similar subject matters, and I think members keep those straight pretty easily. So I think you should go ahead and present your testimony on both bills and expect the members to keep track. And if they can't, they'll ask questions. Please go ahead.
Okay. This is actually my seventh attempt at this very same bill. In 2009, Mr. Chair, you voted for the bill 3414. It passed unanimously in the House and got caught up in the end game of running out of time, which is what we're getting close to now. This bill merely adds the Firefighters Association, Oregon Volunteer Firefighters Association, nonprofit, to the tax checkoff form, whether you use the written form, this hard copy form, or an e-copy. If people want to give their refund to this group, this allows them that opportunity, just like they do the six other statutorial checkoffs that have been put in the last 7 years. The last one, I think, was in 2013. It was the Veteran Suicide Prevention Line. Had the same waiver of the $1 million in there. And it was put in through our committees on veterans and emergency preps because we had such a high level of suicides, and the suicide prevention and address line, the hotline for suicides for veterans, really needed the assistance, and that provided that opportunity. We have 8,000, give or take, volunteers, firefighters in the state, mostly in our rural areas, but in some urban areas, they have partially paid and partially volunteer departments. These people are the people who, the first responders, when you're in these areas of the state, if you have a car crash, a medical emergency, or any kind of first responder requirement, these are the people who will respond to your call. They have the same requirements for training and experience that the paid firefighters do, which takes time and money. And a lot of these people have a difficult time paying for that and also fulfilling the time requirements. Whereas a paid firefighter is on duty for a certain amount of time in a shift, volunteers are on duty 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, at any time of the day or night. And I can't tell you how many Christmas dinners, family events that I've missed when I served 16 years on my local volunteer fire department. The fact that my husband's a chief, we have a fire radio on at all times during the day or night. He can be on the tractor. He can be at work. He's a contractor. He can be in town, out of town, wherever. You hear it on your car, wherever. We serve the rural Clatsop County, about 19 square miles, Highway 26. We have, I think it's about 10 or 12 miles of that. Virtually all of our highway crashes are high speed, even though the speed limit's 55, and when you have a head-on, that's a crash of 110 miles an hour. People don't always die, but they get pretty messed up. And the fact that it's in a rural area and you serve your local fire department, you're going to know most, if not all, of the people except those on the highway who are tourists coming through, like any of you and your families. My district, where in my fire department, is on the North Oregon coast, serving everywhere from Astoria, all of Clatsop County. Our district doesn't go all that way, but in that area, there are five fire departments. They all have mutual aid agreements. Last three big weekends, tourist-wise, numbers of tourists, we had two call-outs that had absolutely no response. Nobody made it. They did a double call-out, then they pulled the mutual aid. Last weekend we had, or weekend before last, we had two calls at the same time on Saddle Mountain. One was a man, older man, who had a stroke. It had to be evac'd. I believe he may not have made it. The other one was a young woman who fell and had to be evac'd. And then there was next few days, another woman who had some sort of medical emergency. And the lucky thing for her was someone was above her on the mountain and Kate was coming down, and it was dusk. She would have crashed there. She had a seizure. And somebody was able to call. We do have good cell service there. These people who respond to these are just like everybody else in your districts. They have day jobs, and they have families, and they must spend a lot of time training, at least one drill per week, and then any number of calls, and their training is constant. There's always a requirement for training. It costs money. It requires time away from work and family, et cetera. So this bill, providing this small piece of something that you can give back to these fire people, who literally everybody in this body is served by at one time or another in some capacity. It's a small thing to do, but it's a big thing to them. It helps defray costs from all kinds of things, from training to when someone dies, maybe their family doesn't have enough money to give them a decent burial. And I believe that Genoa can speak to how the fund was depleted at one point by a man who was responding as a fire. He was a volunteer firefighter and a deputy sheriff. He was off duty. He stopped to when someone waved him down on the side of the road. The guy pulled out a gun and shot him and killed him. He had five kids. And so this fund helped pay for his burial, a very simple burial, but that's what it was used for. And the people who give their, I don't know how big amounts they are. I can't speak to that because I don't know that much of the detail, but they feel like they're doing a good thing, and they are. So I hope that you'll consider this time. This is just as important as any of the other ones, but what's important is that it's a vehicle for people who feel strongly about their volunteer fire departments and those who take care of them when they are not in their districts or in their home districts, when they're on vacation or taking a day trip to the beach. Just a quick example, too. 62-year-old lady driving right past my house, and I don't know what caused her to do it, but she went off the road, luckily nobody coming at her, went across the road, and this is at 65, 70 miles an hour. She was moving pretty fast. You could tell by the details of the wreck. Flipped her car over, landed on the roof, dog flipped out. Her husband was not hurt. She was not hurt. Nobody else involved. And we responded. There are seven people who responded to help her out. And that's what it's all about. So thank you very much. I hope you'll consider giving this a work session in a timely manner so it can get over to the other side and get a work session scheduled there, and also let you know that the Senate is waiting for it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yes, sir.
Chair Barnhart, I'm here to speak on the same bill, so maybe I'll go next.
Sure.
As well.
That'd be great.
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, for the record, Senator Bill Hansel from District 29 in Eastern Oregon. Some of my rural firefighters came to me with some needs before the session began. Working with them, we put together a couple of bills. It turned out Representatives Boone and Hack introduced the same kind of bills on the House side. House Bill 2818 is the House version of what I had with Senate Bill 127. I told Representative Boone I would not move forward my bill and instead support her bill. House Bill 2818 adds the Volunteer Firefighters Association to the entities eligible for individual income tax return contribution checkoff list. In order to qualify for the listing, the entity, as you've heard, must apply and meet the qualifications described in ORS 305.725. They would be collecting 10,000 or more signatures from electors attesting their support for this ability. Many of the incentives provided for volunteer firefighters have gone away. Currently, there are not any tax credits unless you are an emergency medical technician. Rural incentives are restricted to 30 miles from a populated area, and many areas, in fact, most areas of Eastern Oregon are further than that. Volunteer firefighters' efforts are critical to rural Oregon. And this legislation seeks to provide incentives to retain these needed, necessary, and hardworking volunteers. Thank you for your time and your willingness to hear this bill. I'm in complete support of House Bill 2818 and would be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Great. Representative Hack.
Thank you, Chair Barnhart and Vice Chair Vega Peterson and members of the committee. I'm here to talk to you about, I'm Jody Hack, and I represent House District 19, which is South Salem, Almsville, and Turner. And I'm here to talk to you about House Bill 3550. And if I'm understanding correctly, did you also bring the other bill that I had, the tax credit? So I don't know if you're hearing both of mine.
Well, we're hearing one. House Bill 2818, which is the bill that that Representative Boone and Senator Hansel were speaking of, and House Bill 3550. Okay. Those are the two that are open now. And I think 3550 is the one that you introduced, I believe.
Okay. I actually had a couple, so I wasn't sure which. If you decided to bring both of mine forward or just the one. So originally I had...
Let's talk about that offline.
Okay.
These are the ones we have on our agenda today.
Okay. All right. So what House Bill 3550 is attempting to do is to provide counties with the opportunity to offer a property tax exemption for volunteer firefighters. And what this would do is it would give county commissioners the ability to administer an exemption from property taxes for households of volunteer firefighters. The bill would allow counties to specify the amount of the percentage of assessed value of the home that may be exempted. It would also give the counties the opportunity to decide the minimum number of hours the volunteer must serve before they are eligible to claim the exemption. I felt that by giving the counties the freedom to choose the amount and requirements for these property tax exemptions, we'd put the power in the hands of the local counties. It differs from county to county how many rural fire districts there are. Some have many, some don't have hardly any at all. And so I felt like putting the power in the hands of the local counties would be a good idea. You're going to get some pushback on that because the counties have met with me and they feel that that's a responsibility of the state and that they're already burdened enough with public safety and other issues that it could burden the counties. So you'll hear today from those folks that they're not super excited about this idea. When other bills have been presented, and we can discuss that again offline if need be. I'm not the first to introduce a tax credit through, but has not been successful in the state of Oregon, which is an absolute shame in my book, because these folks put their lives on the line for people every day that they volunteer, yet we do nothing to say thank you to them, nor do we do anything to recognize the fact that we appreciate the work that they do monetarily. And so I think that this is a mere token of our respect and a way to honor these folks for what they do. Now, I agree with the counties. They're probably right. This probably is something we should do on a state level, but obviously that hasn't happened. So this was my attempt of trying to make up for that and to say, let's do something for them. But at the same time, now I feel bad because I don't want to hurt the counties. But at some point, we've got to step up and do something for these folks because what they do for us is amazing and should be valued. So again, I think there's some work that probably needs to be done with this a little bit. We may need to put some parameters around it. I don't want to hold it up because I realize that if it's going to happen, we've got to get it through. So again, you're probably going to hear some pushback, but it needed to start somewhere and it hasn't happened and we've got to get something done for these folks. So that's why I brought this about.
Great. Thank you very much. Questions? Representative Smith Warner, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to direct the question to Representative Boone and Senator Hansel. I don't know if you know, but I actually served on the Charitable Checkoff Commission for a four-year period a number of years ago. It's a great organization. It's interesting because Rep. Boone, you and I talked about this a little bit, how the checkoff program has really evolved over the years. When it started, it was a very narrow list that got printed on the forms themselves, and then over time there have been added on that you can fill in. Now there's actually what I think is a pretty good cycle of X number of groups get to be on the form for 2 years, then they cycle off and other groups come on. Because if you look at the receipts that are gotten through that program, there's a significant difference between the years when people are listed on the forms and when you have to go and look up a list and put the number in the little form. So I think it's evolved to being a much fairer way to give this benefit to a broader group of organizations. And I guess I wanted to ask, I know that I think that the my understanding of this would exempt the Volunteer Firefighter Association from the $1 million requirement, but would continue to require the rest of the process, which is the 10,000 signatures. Is that correct?
Okay,
great. And do you know if other groups have been exempted from that in the past? Do you know that?
I'd have to do my homework on this, but I think the ones that we've... Oh, all right. Thank you. Okay, I'll just read them off here. The Oregon Veterans Home, the Non-Game Wildlife Fund, Alzheimer's Disease Research Fund, Oregon Military Emergency Financial Assistance Fund, Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs Veteran Suicide Prevention and Outreach Program Fund.
So those that are listed in the bill are ones that also are exempt from the dollar amount. Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Other questions? How many volunteer firefighters are there in Oregon these days? Well, we've got several hands. Let's go with the one at the table.
How many? 8,000?
8,500. 7,800.
7,800. That's right. Okay.
And, you know, if I may just add to that, it's getting more and more difficult to recruit. And the age of the fire departments, especially in the rural areas, volunteers are older and older, and you will see some average ages of departments around 55. So it's difficult. Young people have families. Everybody has families. But there's just more requirements on time and the training. And just remember, they're all EMTs, too.
All of them are?
Yeah.
Okay. I want to add one thing, too. When you hear the pushback from the counties, and you're going to get it probably next. This is a may, not a shall. They don't have to participate if they don't want to.
Very good.
They may.
Senator? I'm just going to say, I don't think you'll have the pushbacks from the counties on
2818.
No. I don't think so either. Thank you.
Thank you very
any
much.
Other questions for this panel? Thank you so much, and we appreciate your interrupting your other committees to attend here today. I'm going to go down my list. I have Jenna Ingram, Dave Sellers, Mark, is it Kreutzer? Please come forward.
This right here?
Jenna, welcome.
Hello again, Mr. Chair. Jenna Ingram, Oregon Volunteer Firefighters Association. I'm also executive director of the Oregon Fire District Directors Association. My intent here today is to create the same atmosphere that we saw in the House Veterans and Emergency Preparedness Committee, where committee members, both Democrat and Republicans, joined hands and said, we must have this bill. We must do what we can to put this bill forward. And it was so much fun. I'm looking to recreate that again today. The first thing I want to address is a comment that I got from someone apparently who was watching online and contacted me and said, if the Volunteer Firefighters Association can afford a lobbyist, then why do they need contributions? And I would like to clear that up right now. The Oregon Volunteer Firefighters Association does not pay me to lobby for them. My company has a small association management contract, and I lobby for them pro bono, and I am mighty proud to do so. I lost a home to a fire. I am so far out in the boonies that by the time anybody saw it, it was pretty far gone. The volunteer firefighters responded, took care of what was left, made sure it didn't spread to my barns, my outbuildings, my neighbors. I didn't lose any animals. They never sent me a bill, and I will not send them a bill for anything I do on their behalf in this building. So I just wanted to clear that up. Those of you who are out there listening, lobby for them pro bono. Since I've been working with the fire service, attraction and retention of volunteer firefighters has been a nationwide issue, so much so that FEMA put out a manual on how to attract and retain volunteer firefighters. The problem was, back then, most of the things that they suggested were illegal in Oregon due to our ethics statutes, because volunteer firefighters, even though they're not paid, they are still, Mr. Chairman, you know this, they are still considered public officials. And so things that were working in Colorado, like, some jurisdictions were giving free cable or, you know, these kinds of things, those were not permitted. So we were looking at ways to attract, and Representative Boone is absolutely correct. It's harder to, once you get the younger volunteers and you get them in and they it's in their blood, you can keep them. But it's harder to attract those younger volunteers. And so we do administer some programs that we hope will bring in the younger volunteers. The Oregon Volunteer Firefighters Association, and I'm so proud of them. I just want to acknowledge the people in the room who are here. We have people here from State and Fire, Lane County Fire Authority, Clackamas Fire District 1, Nestucca, and Cloverdale. We have meetings about once a month, and the board members travel from Hermiston. They travel from Southern Oregon. They don't get reimbursed for their mileage. You know, I try to buy them a pizza once in a while. They don't ask for anything for themselves. And so when you're looking at, you know, this million-dollar barrier, that's a big barrier to them, because if they had it, believe me, they would be reimbursing themselves for the mileage that they travel across the state. So anyway, I just wanted to acknowledge those in the room. So the Oregon Volunteer Firefighters used to have a fund that they would use to do equipment grants, scholarship, and training. There was a death benefit, usually about $1,000. It wasn't a lot, but they don't have a lot of money. Hardship, if someone was injured on the job and couldn't go to work, it was usually $500. These boards, districts and departments would submit a request to the Volunteer Firefighters Association, and the board would take it under advisement, and usually a pretty quick turnaround within 24 hours to get that back. The problem is, and David's going to address it in a minute, the need was just greater than what was coming in, and that fund was completely depleted. So that brings us to now. It was about 8 years ago, I was talking to someone in the Senate, and they said, well, why don't you apply to get them on the charitable tax checkoff? And I started filling out the I pulled the application, I looked at it, I looked at the statute, and lo and behold, it says you have to collect 10,000 signatures, and I thought, oh, no problem, I have all the energy in the world. And it said you have to have banked $1 million the previous year, and I looked at that and I thought, boy, if we'd banked $1 million, I'd be charging them for we're going down to the Capitol, but, you know, we just don't, and we never, ever will. So last November, the board met, and they decided that if that fund were created again, and by the way, it was a separate account, it was even in a separate bank, so it wasn't getting spent for anything else other than that the intent that the purpose it was intended for, which was hardship, death, and scholarships, etc. So they decided last November maybe the best approach was to, if they were able to build this fund up again, to use it for training to prevent deaths, to prevent, you know, injuries. And they decided, the board voted, they would like to give away 20 scholarships across the state for training purposes. And then if there was money over and above that, it would go to death benefits and some of the other things, equipment grants and the other things that they, you know, use the money for. So they decided that that would be the best use of those funds. And, you know, that's why I'm here today asking. The problem is, you know, is that $1 million. Representative Boone did read off the list. This is not setting a precedent. There are six other entities who have been excused from having that $1 million in the bank, and the volunteer firefighters just want to remove it won't automatically put us on. We still have to gather the signatures. We still have to go through the scrutiny of that application process. This will just remove the biggest obstacle that we see. And I just want to, you have my written testimony. I'm not even going to address that. I was just trying to hit some key points. I just want to tell you just quickly about their conferences, about these training opportunities that we're trying to get people to attend. It's scheduled for next, the 2015 is scheduled for next month. When you go to a volunteer firefighter conference, then I wish I could take every single one of you there. I manage associations. I go to conferences all the time. The first time I went to a volunteer firefighter conference, I was shocked. What an education it was for me. I'm used to my people sitting behind a table and getting lectured to. That's the kind of conferences that we did at the Realtors and the Chambers of Commerce and the Farm Bureau and everybody else. At a volunteer firefighter conference, they do things like rope rescue, vehicle extrication, skid prevention, water rescue. They're out there in the rivers with these ropes and they do the high angle rescue, and it's absolutely amazing. We partner with DPSST to provide the best training we can provide so that our people are safe and so that they're best equipped to serve the people of Oregon. It's a worthwhile training opportunity that we want to get as many people to as possible, so they're willing to put aside the things like the hardship benefits to get people to training and maybe prevent some deaths and injuries down the road. Mr. Chairman, I want to just talk a little bit about the history of these bills. As Representative Boone mentioned, nobody has ever voted against or spoken against any of the bills that have been brought forward. We mentioned in 2009, House Bill 3414, it passed the House unanimously on Thursday, June 29th in 2009, as I was on my way to a volunteer firefighter conference, and I said, I'm not going to go now because I want to stay here and get this bill through. Unfortunately, when this bill passes, doggone it, it's always 2 days before they sign EDIE, or it'll receive a hearing in February and then never be heard from again. And I know there are probably reasons, you know, for that. God has not shown me what those reasons are, so I just keep trying. We just are begging that this bill be given a work session so that it can move out. And I have talked with the Senate. The Senate is anxious to work on it, and they're looking forward to it. Moving forward, again, there's no opposition. As with previous efforts, time is the key issue. So we're just asking that it be heard in a timely fashion and that you know, people are given the opportunity. You know, I'm at a point now where if the bill were just given a vote, even if it went down, you'd probably never hear from me again. I just want to know. I just want it to get a vote and, you know, move it out so that you know, we can move forward. If the legislature truly doesn't want this, maybe we need to move on to some other creative idea for raising funds. But until the legislature tells me no, I'm going to be back here asking for it. I think that's just about all I had except for one other thing. I believe it was in 2011, the Department of Revenue did come in and testify. They were neutral on the bill. What I was looking for was clarification that this would not have a negative impact on the department itself, and they did provide that testimony, for which I'm grateful. That wraps up my testimony. I'm happy to answer questions, or you can take the rest of the panel.
Thank you. Let's hear from the other members of the panel, and then see if we have questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'd like to also congratulate Chair Barnhart on the pronunciation of my last name. That's probably one of the first times they've ever said it correctly the first time, so thank you very much.
And you're required now to repeat it for the record, if you would.
My name is Mark Kreitzer. I am the president of the Oregon Fire District Directors Association. Oregon Fire District Directors Association was formed in 1950 and serves the elected public officials of over 200 fire districts throughout Oregon, all special districts formed under ORS Chapter 478. The five-member governing boards are responsible for the financial and management oversight of the districts. They serve without compensation. The attraction and retention of volunteer firefighters has been a top priority for the fire service, both in Oregon and across the United States for a number of years. FEMA has published booklets on how to attract and retain volunteers, and governors have formed task forces to study this issue. When Oregonians pay their taxes, they have the option of checking a box that allows the portion of their return to go to charitable organizations. House Bill 2818 would remove the $1 million requirement by providing an exemption for the Oregon Volunteer Firefighters Association, as the legislature has done for similar organizations such as the Oregon Veterans Home, the Non-Game Wildlife Fund, Alzheimer's Disease Research, and the Oregon Military Emergency Financial Assistance Fund. This would not set a precedence. The bill would not grant any other special considerations to the Oregon Volunteer Firefighters Association. OFDDA believes that House Bill 2818 represents a small step forward in assisting volunteers. For small rural fire protection districts in particular, volunteers are the lifeblood of their communities and often the first responders to fire, traffic accidents, and other potential tragedies. As the number of volunteers dwindle to an alarming level, it is up to us as elected officials to make policy decisions that will provide incentives and increase training. House Bill 2818 accomplishes this objective. The monies that would be generated from the checkbox would be used for retention, recruitment, and education of our volunteers. It would also keep funding a relief fund to assist volunteer firefighter organizations in the event of a serious injury or death of one of their volunteers, and also in case there is serious damage to equipment, apparatus, or fire stations. On behalf of the elected officials of Oregon Rural Fire Protection District, we urge your support of House Bill 2818, and we thank you for hearing our testimony. And while we are appreciative of the public hearing, we respectfully ask that House Bill 2818 to be scheduled for a work session in the House Revenue Committee as soon as possible. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Barnhart and the board, my name is David Sellers. I'm currently serving as past president of the Oregon Volunteer Firefighters Association and have given my time for the last 7 or 8 years on the board. I've been a volunteer for almost 28 years. I've never asked for anything to do this. It gives me great pride in telling people that I'm a volunteer. But as I sit on this board and I watch the programs that we try to provide our volunteers go away because of the financial burdens we run into with not being able to raise funds or taking all of our time away from being the board that we are to provide these training and these things to go try and find revenue sources so that we can do this. When this was first presented way back, this is a no-brainer. There are people in Oregon that want to give volunteer firefighters their extra funds. But we seem to be spending money to try and get a message out to them to say we'd like to have you donate some money to us so that we can do these things. I have been going to conference for 27 years. I know the benefit of the training. I know what volunteers get out of it. And many of these volunteers can't get a high angle rescue and a certification out of their department in Antelope, Oregon. They can't do it. And if we can go to their chiefs and we can go to their training officers and say, we'll provide this kind of training. We have a gentleman that comes from Reno, Nevada, and he donates his time to teach this class for us because he feels it's important to give back. He's a career firefighter. We try and get people to come in and teach our classes and teach our people so that we can keep this cost down. So departments that are having popcorn sales and pancake breakfasts to buy their turnouts can send their people to training. And when something bad happens, that they've got a way to contact us and say, hey, can we get a little bit of funds to get through this tragedy? The last time we were able to give money from our firefighter relief fund was when a young lady, Ellen Dieterbrandt, you might remember this, was riding her bike down Highway 84 and got hit by a car and was killed. And the Hoodland Fire Department took money from their association to pay some of the fees and some of the stuff that with expenses that happened right away. They sent us a request to see if we could donate some money back from our relief fund, and we pretty much emptied it again. And then as a board, we voted to say, let's send some money. And then we, as a board said, and we hope we don't have anybody else that needs some money because we're out. As it was testified, we donate our time, we donate our resources because we believe in the Oregon Volunteer Firefighters Association. This week alone, I've already spent $100 in gas on activities that I have done for the Oregon Volunteer Firefighters Association. This week. I can't tell you enough how much we need some help from our Oregon citizens to continue to do the things that we do as the Oregon Volunteer Firefighters Association, to continue to have people come to us and say, we want to be on this board, we want to help volunteers in Oregon, to be able to put on an outstanding conference that is second to none, to give these firefighters the training and education they need. We don't ever want to have a situation come up where a bad accident has happened, somebody is trapped, and the firefighter looks in the window and says, I'm sorry, I don't know how to get you out. We don't want that to happen. And these volunteers give time and time again their time and energy, Monday night drills, Thursday night drills, Saturday learn to burns, where they learn this stuff so they can do it. Anything we can do to help these smaller departments that live off of pancake breakfasts and popcorn sales, we're going to do. Thank you for hearing us. I hope that we can push this through so that we can get everybody on board, and we will go get the signatures. We know we have the support. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions for this panel? Representative Johnson?
That was a thumbs up, not a question.
Oh, I see. Thank you. Thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony. Jerry Kearney, please. Is there anyone else who wants to speak on House Bill 2818? I have a couple other witnesses on the other bill. Welcome.
Thank you, Representative Barnhart, and members of the committee. I appreciate you taking the time to hear my testimony today. I trust that I've got this microphone adequately adjusted.
You do. It's very good.
Good. I don't understand.
And if you'll state your name for the record.
My name is Jerry Kearney, K-E-A-R-N-E-Y. I'm a lieutenant with Clackamas Volunteer Firefighters.
Thank you. Go ahead and give your testimony.
And I'm also the president of the Clackamas Volunteer Firefighters Association. I do not understand this testimony about volunteers getting older. I don't feel the least bit older. But that is not my testimony.
I think I agree with that observation.
When you folks have the need to dial 911, it is the worst day or one of the worst days of your lives. And we have the mission to mitigate your problem in a timely fashion. And that's exactly what you've heard today. We're asking you to mitigate our problem in a timely fashion. Don't let the clock run out. We do not let the clock run out on you. I would like to answer a question that hasn't been raised yet, but I would like you to be aware of it. Clackamas is a combination department. We have career firefighters and we have volunteers. We have approximately 100 volunteers. Mm-hmm. A volunteer in Clackamas donates approximately 60 hours a month to pulling shifts, doing firefighting activities in a firehouse, going to fires, emergencies, medical emergencies, things of that nature. In addition to that, that same firefighter has 16 hours of drill. In addition to that.
Per month?
Yes, sir.
Yep, thank you.
In addition to that, last year we had 88, what I will refer to as public relations and education events that occurred throughout the district that we were tapped to staff. 3 to 4 people at each one, some of them lasting an hour, some of them lasting a full day. We make a difference, even in somewhat urban Clackamas, because we also service somewhat rural Eagle Creek and Boring and suburban Damascus. The fact of the matter is that the $250 that is being mentioned for the counties to be permitted to allow to be deducted would pay for perhaps 2 shifts that a volunteer would work. But he's still going to work, or she's still going to work the shifts that are involved. As far as the money going to the Volunteer Firefighters Association. In Clackamas, we are very, very fortunate. We have a strong cadre of professional training officers who train us. But what they train us in, because they only have so much time, and we only have so much time, they train us in maintenance of our credentials for the state. What OVFA offers, as you've heard, are some of the more technical rescue environments that are not required by the state, but are really nice to have when you need them. I have seen personally, in only 52 years with the fire service, the volunteers who have pulled people out of situations that they had no right to live through, but they did. I thank you for your time. I will be happy to answer any questions you might have, and I urge you to please move this bill through the process and procedure.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Lieutenant Kearney? Thank you. We appreciate
thank you,
your testimony. Last up, Gil Riddell, Wendy Johnson, please. And they're testifying on House Bill 3550. Anyone else on House Bill 3550?
Go ahead. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Gil Riddell, Association of Oregon Counties. I will not be addressing the procedural flaws in House Bill 3550. There are a few, but I'll be addressing the concept itself. According to Legislative Council, this bill in effect delegates to counties the state's authority to exempt property taxes of all local taxing districts within the county. AOC appreciates the public service provided to all of Oregon by volunteer firefighters who generously give their time and energy and risk their health to keep communities safe. AOC supports appropriate local government, government control of policy. However, county commissioners and judges oppose this bill for several reasons. This is a matter of statewide interest, and so it seems more appropriate to provide an income tax credit from state finances rather than property tax exemption from local finances. At this point, I want to give a shout out to State Representative Debbie Boone. She has been at this for a long time and attempting to provide recognition and benefits as a matter of statewide interest over several sessions, and we certainly hope that she succeeds. And also, shout out to Representative Hack for being involved in this so deeply. House Bill 3550 quickly makes a policy question of paying volunteers to perform voluntary service a political question, where those who would benefit organize to influence the close-at-hand county governing body. It's akin to the state passing to counties a hot potato. There are many worthy volunteer programs, search and rescue, hospitals, libraries. Who's next for this benefit? Unless this benefit covers all worthy programs, it creates a societal inequity. And there will be inequities within this authority in any event. The volunteer firefighter who rents will receive no benefit. The volunteer firefighter who lives out of the county will receive no benefit. If the ordinance uses a percentage of assessed value to be exempt, then the size of the benefit will depend differently depending on the assessed value of the individual's homestead. And there's the question of whether the value of this benefit becomes federal taxable income to the beneficiary. The state alone enacts and authorizes property tax expenditures affecting local resources. And with permission of the chair, I would like to quickly describe two instances where counties have not been treated as equal partners with the state in matters of public finance, notwithstanding the fact that we have a long list of services that we share with the state, as shown on this chart.
I think in the interest of time, you might confine yourself then, fairly narrowly to this bill.
Okay, then then I would just recommend...
I think you've made your point.
Okay. Then I am through. I take the signal. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Wendy.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Wendy Johnson, here today on behalf of the League of Oregon Cities. I think the proponents noted this bill needs some more work. I don't think I'll go into all the details, but I spotted a lot of issues. I think the point of focus is on rural volunteer firefighters, but this is not limited to rural. It covers cities as well. It allows the county to make the decision for all firefighters within the whole county, and so as Mr. Riddell explained, that decision of the county would apply to all taxing districts, including schools, including cities. It doesn't have any restriction on where the firefighter lives. Could be in a different county than where they serve. There are a lot of definitions of volunteer firefighters, and many of our cities, our last survey showed that over 40% of our cities are providing the service or providing firefighting services rather than the county. There are some that it's a special district that provides the firefighting service, but the way the bill is written, it's only the county that makes that choice. Our property taxes are pretty sacrosanct. They're to be used for services for schools. And right now, to my knowledge, there's only two individual type property tax exemptions, and they're really limited. They're for veterans
and military members, and even those are really limited on the dollar amount. And even the military one, it's only if you're a member of the National Oregon National Guard, or you're called up not for active military regular. If it's a veteran, it's you have to have a disability, and there are income limits, and so they are very limited. This would be very broad. I think the proponents said there are over 7,000 volunteers, so it's just not very narrowly tailored, and we just don't know the impact that it would have on our property taxes, so we're concerned about that. I helped with workers' comp and insurance coverage some years ago, and that was a big issue of volunteers that it wasn't taken care of. So I know that we need to help our volunteers. I just don't know that property tax is the way to go. And there are just a lot of unanswered questions of how this would be applied, lacking definitions and such. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? Don't see any. Thank you very much.
Thank
and with
you.
That, we'll close the public hearings on House Bill 2818. And House Bill 3550. And we'll open a work session on House Bill 2266. Mazin. This one went by fairly quickly, so we need to get him to tell us about it again.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the House Bill 2266 is the bill that you heard that had to deal with the weight mile tax relief or taking it away from the requirement of dealers of trucks. Those dealers do not perform any moving of goods or materials, but basically for test drives. So the amount of administrative process and cost seems to be less than the outcome of the tax. And this bill asks you to relieve them from doing so. You had also the Department of Transportation testify that this is this removal does not impact the taxation or any of the revenue, and we don't have also a fiscal or a revenue impact for this bill.
Well, we actually do have a fiscal impact, unless I'm misreading it. I think what they've indicated is that there's no expenditure impact. But the revenue impact isn't finished in at least in OLIS.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a final revenue impact statement for the bill?
I thought we uploaded it, Mr. Chair, and this is a minimal impact that we had.
So you have it. It's just not up on OLIS yet.
It seems not to have made it.
Okay, but you're confident that you have it.
Yes.
Being the guy who prepared it, you ought to know.
That's right.
All right.
And Mr. Chair, these are very, very tiny dollars. This is not.
Yeah.
It's not going to show up anywhere.
That's what I figured. What I understand we're doing primarily is allowing dealers not to keep the detailed records that they would otherwise need to keep in order to deal with the weight mile, but simply to pay the tax on diesel as a regular tax rather than a weight mile tax. That's the essence of it, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. All right. What's your pleasure, committee?
Move it.
Representative Davis?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2266 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Davis moves House Bill 2266 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Any objection to the motion? Hearing none, it's so ordered. Representative Bence is excused. Who'd like to carry this bill? Representative Davis will carry. And with that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 2266 and open a work session on House Bill 2447. And that is Chris's, isn't it? Thank you, Mr. King.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2447 pertains to the residential energy tax credit.
And there's an amendment, isn't there?
There is a dash A4 amendment, which 2447A includes an extension of the RETC. The dash A4 removes that sunset extension. So if you choose to adopt that amendment, there will be no extension of the tax credit. And the policies that would be enacted are a modification of the tax credit cap calculation for Category 1 vehicles. There is a revenue impact statement. It has a positive revenue impact of $300,000 for the 15-17 and 17-19 biennium. There are some offsetting impacts in the bill. One of the caps actually increases the tax credit for alternative fuel devices, and the other piece raises revenue by instituting a more restrictive cap. So collectively, it raises a few hundred thousand dollars for basically two tax years, 2016 and 2017. The tax credit sunsets under current law on January 1, 2018. The bill with the amendment does not affect that sunset date. So you have the revenue impact statement, and the fiscal, I believe, is a minimal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm looking for the revenue impact statement. I don't see it. Is it been loaded recently?
It's not under the bill, but it's under today's meeting materials.
Ah, okay. That may explain why I'm not finding it. Okay. I'll go back to that.
Which might have happened to the other bill, too. Mm-hmm.
That's possible, yeah. Meeting materials. Thank you. I haven't yet mastered OLIS, obviously. Things get put in different places. Okay, revenue impact statement. All right. Well, I'm wondering, given what you've described, if this should go to the floor as is, or whether it ought to go to the Tax Credit Committee. Representative Rebecca Peterson, thoughts?
I would say that we move the dash A4 amendment here in this committee, and then move. We can move it to the Tax Credit Committee to be considered.
That makes sense to me. Do you have a motion for us?
Yes. Chair, I move the dash A4 amendment to House Bill 2447A.
Representative Greg Peterson moves the dash 4 amendment.
A4.
The A4 amendment to House Bill 2447. Yes, Representative Leininger.
Oh, I'm waiting. If there's discussion, I would love to.
Yeah, this is discussion
okay,
time. Yes.
Well, thank you. Well, I just want to note I'm pleased that we have the A4 amendment that's eliminating the extension of the sunset. And, you know, and I want to reiterate that I think the Department of Energy does important work. I think that based on a whole bunch of concerning things that have happened over the last several years in terms of Betsy and some concerns people have had about influence from the partner of the former governor, concerns about return on investment, cost-benefit analysis information being available. I strongly feel that it's important that the Department of Energy move forward with an analysis of the cost-benefit of the tax credit programs that it runs. And I know that Representative Whitsitt and Representative Johnson and I had a bill we were trying to move forward on that may not be going anywhere this session, but I think regardless of the vehicle, I really would like to see that done for the agency. I think you're trying to make some important transitions that are worth making, but to restore public confidence, or at least maybe confidence among a lot of the people who I interact with about the value of investments in the Department of Energy, that'll be helpful. That said, I'm really excited that the A4 amendments are in place, and I'm going to be supporting the bill with the A4 amendments.
Well, you're slightly ahead of things, but I get the point you're making. Other discussion of the motion, which is to adopt the A4 amendment. No further, is there any objection to the motion? All right, seeing none, it's so ordered. Representative Vega Peterson, a motion for the referral of the Tax Credit Committee.
Yes. Chair, I move House Bill 2447A as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation with a referral to the Joint Tax Committee.
Thank you very much. Representative Vega Peterson moves House Bill 2447 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and the request for a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Tax Credits. Is there any discussion? Any objection to the motion? All right, seeing none, it is so ordered. Don't need a carrier because it's going to another committee. With that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 2447 and open a work session on House Bill 2448. Chris?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, like the bill you just heard, there is an amendment here that removes the sunset extension. It's the dash A2 amendment. So if you adopt that, there would be no sunset extension for the tax credits in this bill. This bill pertains to what has been referred to as the Energy Incentives Program. There's a conservation tax credit, a renewable energy tax credit, and a transportation tax credit. With the removal of the sunset, the policies that remain in place pertain to a recertification process for conservation projects with a cost of at least $1 million. There is no revenue impact, and the fiscal is minimal.
Okay. So this one, if we understand it correctly, can probably go to the floor directly without having to go through tax credits. I'm getting head nods all around. Representative Vega Peterson, the dash two.
Chair, I move the dash A2 amendment to House Bill 2448.
Thank you. Representative Vega Peterson moves the dash A2 amendment to House Bill 2448. Is there discussion? Yes, Representative Langer.
I just want to reiterate my pleasure that we are taking out the extension of the sunset and the same themes that I articulated before.
Thank you. Same comment.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else? Representative Johnson.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm just going to say the director is here if he wanted just to explain what the impact of not extending the sunset and so forth and how the agency is prepared to work with that.
I would love to hear that.
Yes.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. I hadn't thought of that, but I think it's a great
idea.
So
we understand exactly what's in play here and what their intents are.
Yes, sir.
Good afternoon, Chair Barnhart, members of the committee. For the record, Michael Kaplan, Oregon Department of Energy. We approached both of these bills as we came into session as an opportunity from a management and administrative standpoint to strengthen the programs, both from a delivery standpoint and a long-term management standpoint. I think as the discussion got going, we had to put ourselves in your shoes that you're making a significant policy commitment with the extensions. So as we looked at how we're communicating about these programs and their effectiveness, that there's certainly more work that we can do there. I do think that we do raise one legitimate issue that I would encourage this committee and perhaps the legislature to take on is the schedule of when credits are extended for small agencies, taking them right up to when they're set to expire is a management challenge, certainly worth maybe looking at them a little bit earlier, which I think is still a valid perspective. That said, we always knew entering this session that we do have two more years. We do have another shot in 17 in which with the sort of minor modifications but the program improvements that we're proposing in both bills, that we come back with a stronger policy discussion that we can provide you with information in which you can make more informed decisions. And to Representative Leininger's point, to give you real value, real data on the value of these investments, which we know we have, but we have to make sure we do the best job as possible about communicating that impact.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you very much. And with that, I think the motion on the floor is the adoption of the A2 amendment. Any further discussion? Any objection to the motion? Seeing none, it's adopted. Representative Vega Peterson?
Chair, I move House Bill 2448A as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Vega Peterson moves House Bill 2448 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Any objection to the motion? No objection. Motion carries. Who would like to carry the bill? Representative Vega Peterson will carry. Thank you very much. With that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 2448. Paul, have I finished the agenda? I have. See you all on Monday. With that, the committee is adjourned.